Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Evan Leibovich. I want to welcome everybody to the call. This call is to be chaired by myself and Jean-Jacques Subrena, who are the co-chairs of the Future Challenges Working Group. We're in a bit of an awkward situation right now in that we're trying to bring Jean-Jacques into the call through dial-outs. The first try is having some difficulties, and I'm in the awkward situation of myself being far from 100%, having woken up with a bit of the flu, so I'm going to be speaking a little slower and a little more hoarsely than usual. Just as a bit of a recap, what this is a webinar on the R3 paper. R3 is sort of our shorthand because the white paper is called Making ICANN Relevant, Responsive, and Respected. This webinar is an attempt to engage with the community, not only within the at-large community, but within the greater ICANN community and beyond, and to sort of map out what the authors of the white paper have tried to do with this. There are six authors of the white paper, of which myself and Jean-Jacques are two. They include former ICANN board members, former GAC members, and other people who have a really deep background both in governance issues and in ICANN's internals. And we've been at this for quite a while. So the most recent activity that happened with this white paper was its unanimous endorsement by the At-Large Advisory Committee, and this is the essentially the first public webinar that is happening since that approval happened. I want to make very, very clear that the white paper is not a specific instruction to the ICANN board to do something tomorrow. This is intended to start a conversation that needs to happen. Long before the WCIT took place, there were people within at large and elsewhere that believed that some significant change was needed in the way ICANN works, in the approach to multi-stakeholderism that is being taken, and with the relationships with other bodies. Jean-Jacques, are you here?
Yes, Evan, this is Jean-Jacques. I hope you and others can hear me now.
I can hear you fine.
Good. So shall I pick up from there and say a few words?
Please do.
Thanks. So hello, everyone. Sorry for the connection problems on Adobe Connect. Quite unusual. But I'd like to add to what Evan said a couple of remarks. The first is that we're in the midst of something potentially very important within ICANN and outside of ICANN. Let's start with the easier part, which is inside ICANN. There's a new CEO who is really giving a new sense of direction and trust to ICANN. It's still too early to say how successful his attempts will be, but we wish him good luck, and there are signs that it's going in the right direction. The other event I'd just like to use as background or backdrop to our R3 paper and the discussion we're going to have today with you is the external factor, which is that after years of uneven interest manifested by various governments around the world for the Internet, not only for ICANN, suddenly since the, let's say, two, three, four past years, governments in general have paid much greater attention to the interest of the Internet as a tool for themselves, and this has translated into various initiatives. The ITU discussions in Dubai is just one reflection of that. And as you saw, they are very opposite views. So I just want to remind us of the background against which we are working on this paper. Now, I don't think we need a longer introduction to this paper. So let's go to item number two of our agenda, which is to actually look at the various parts of the R3 paper as it's known now. And this will be done in the following way. First, there are four main parts to this document, and we will go through them, either me or Evan. I will deal with the global public interest, that's item one, or chapter one, and then Evan will take up the multi-stakeholder mechanism, and then I will deal with global governance, and finally Evan will deal with practical cooperation. So now let's start with the first chapter, which is the global public interest. First overall remark is that since I've been connected with ICANN, and that's a few years, every now and then people say that it is necessary to define in an almost clinical way what is the global public interest. So there's the pros and cons for this, but I think like good health and fairness, they are general concepts, and there should be, in the same manner, a global concept generally accepted everywhere for what is the public interest as far as the Internet is concerned, and that is that it should remain an open system, that access should not be restricted by governments or by the rate of fares, access, etc., and that it should be a tool for humanity whilst also serving as a business tool for those developers, name vendors, etc., who make a business of it, and that is quite legitimate. So the questions we have about the global public interest, as you can see on page two, I think, of the document, I won't read through that, but it's simply to say that we cannot speak of the global public interest only in very general terms. There is a context, and the context is that ICANN, over the past few years, has already gone through several of these exercises. One of them, and I was lucky to be a participant and one of the main drafters of that, was the Improving Institutional Confidence paper, which was brought out by the now defunct President's Strategy Committee of ICANN. And that was later built upon, or pieces of that were taken up and integrated into the Affirmation of Commitments, or AOC. And also in the, it served in part for the ATRT. So we see that whereas in the first few years the notion of global public interest was a bit vague, now it's becoming more a subject of discussion. So this is certainly an area on which we would like to open the discussion in a few minutes. I won't say anything more for the global public interest for the time being and suggest that, Evan, you take it from there on the multi-stakeholder model.
Thanks, Jean-Jacques. One of the things that was of concern to the authors and the committee going forward was the health of the multi-stakeholder model as ICANN has envisioned it. Within at large, we've seen some of the strengths of it. We've also seen a great number of the weaknesses of it. The tendency for various groups to work in silos and to each go into their little cubby hole and come out with either their policy statements or their advice. There's very few instances where these all come together, and very often when they do, they come at it from a very inequitable stance. I was very, very delighted to hear the new comments of the new CEO of ICANN in saying that we need to make a shift from multi-stakeholderism to multi-equal stakeholderism. And one of the things that we discovered and commented on within the R3 paper was the problems with the current system and with the lack of equity with all voices. And so in order for ICANN to weather the storm, shall we say, from outside groups that say we're not representative, we're not giving the various stakeholders equal seats at the table, we need to do something about it. We've seen increasingly, for instance, that the GAC is increasingly frustrated with the interaction that it has within ICANN and with the various ICANN stakeholders. We've had our own frustrations within the at-large advisory committee of sometimes having what we consider to be the public interest sufficiently represented. And so one of the things that we're trying to do with this paper is to bring some of this inequity to the forefront and to try and come up with better ideas on how to re-envision the multi-stakeholder system. We saw at the ITU that there was an intention by some parties to say, well, governments, they represent the public interest, so why don't we just put it all in their hands? Well, we don't take that view. We think that this needs to be fixed from within, but having said that, there is a significant amount of fixing still left to be done. And on that, I will hand it back to Jean-Jacques on the issue of global governance.
Thank you, Evan. This is Jean-Jacques. So on global governance, here again, I will not attempt to read the paper. You've probably read it already and seen also our recommendations at the end of the R3 paper. Let me just say that this chapter, global governance, I think has come into focus very much over the past few weeks, if only because of the ITU conference in Dubai. And we see how much passion is engendered by this discussion, not only between sets of states which have different views, but also between states, meaning governments, and other stakeholders who are not representing state or national authority. Businesses, but individual users, etc. So in this respect, I think that it is really, really time for us to reflect on what is really required for the global governance of the Internet. That is the general remark. Now, to be a bit more specific about the global governance and its impact or its requirements, as far as ICANN is concerned, I must say that there have been improvements over the years, but I remember that when I was a member of the board of ICANN, I was quite puzzled to find more than once that the internal governance was really far from the level or the standards that ICANN was imposing upon its other partners or upon its stakeholders externally. For instance, the board, the way the chair and vice chair were elected, when I arrived, no written ballot. I mean, it was just a show of hands. So think about the protection of secrecy. But also things like the way in which the chairs and vice chairs of board committees were appointed. I think that has made progress, but it's still not up to the highest international standards. So to resume my 2 points. First of all, externally, ICANN has to play a larger role and a more visible role, although its mandate is clearly technical. It cannot avoid, it can no longer avoid being more explicitly into the discussion of global governance. And my second point on this was that internally, there's still quite a bit of progress to be made in internal governance, especially on the side of the board or between the board and the other parts of ICANN. Now over to you, Evan, for the last chapter, which is practical, institutional and practical cooperation.
Thanks. And again, these issues, we keep referring back to Dubai, we keep referring back to the ITU and to WCIT, and there's a reason for it, because in some ways these meetings have also sort of laid bare in a very public sphere some of the flaws that the community has working with ICANN, and part of it is the relationship between these groups and ICANN. There's no formal relationship between ICANN and ITU, not in any kind of high-profile way. When they look at ICANN, it says something else, something that's out there. And it's to some people this is a matter of control. But I mean, even just having channels to be able to communicate. One of the things that some at-large people came back from Dubai with was the comment that, well, there's some countries that voted in favor of the ITRs because it's the only place where they feel they actually have a say in things. And that's really, really distressing to hear. So the fact that there is no organized relationship between ICANN and groups like the Internet Governance Forum, like the ITU, and so on, when we find ourselves operating outside their spheres, then it's only natural that they're going to see us as something either beyond their control to some, or even beyond their communications and ability to influence to others. This is, in our eyes, a significant drawback. And the ironic thing is that ICANN has this global community. When ICANN has a relationship with other bodies, it doesn't necessarily have to send its CEO on a roadshow to regional meetings all over the place. There is an ICANN presence around the globe. At-large has a mandate of trying to have an at-large structure in every country on Earth. We have a way to go, but it is a stated goal. ICANN, through its various stakeholders, has a global presence. It needs to leverage that now to try and have better relationships with bodies both global, regional, and national, to try and make sure that it is not seen as something on the outside, that it is something integral to global governance and other bodies. ICANN's remit is very specific to do with Internet names and numberings and not to do with content, not to do with filtering, not to do with deep packet inspection, but it has its own role to play, and it needs to be seen as an integral part of global workings on this, and not something on the outside. So the lack of relationships was also a focus of what we did, and that was reflected in the fourth section of the paper. Thanks.
Thank you, Evan. Now we open the floor to the discussion. I have a problem, a technical problem, in that as I don't have access to a microphone on the Adobe page, apparently, and I'm on the landline, I will ask Evan or perhaps a member of the staff, if Heidi agrees, to signal anything if anything goes wrong. The way Evan and I have organized this is to suggest that we open the floor to concerns. But before you go into a development of the point you want to make, could you just say, I'd like to bring up a point about, let's say, the voting rights or the this or that item, which falls into one of the four chapters of the R3 paper. We'll try to group these, Evan and I, and we'll come back to you so that you can develop your point or your question, and then we'll try to answer, if that's all right with everyone. So the floor is open, and I see that there's other hands up. Chuck Gomes, at least I can see this happening on Adobe Connect. So the first to speak will be Chuck Gomes. Please, Chuck.
Thanks, Joan-Jacques. I appreciate the effort that you guys have gone to. And let me start off by saying that I'm speaking in my personal capacity in the comments I'll make today. With regard to the multi-stakeholder model in your paper, the term informed consent is used, in particular saying that we need to fully engender the informed consent of all ICANN's components. A couple questions that I think need to be discussed, and obviously we can't resolve these today probably, but how would informed consent be measured? How would large numbers of what we know to be very diverse members communicate their consent? Would silence be interpreted as consent? And then you, in that same section, you go in to talk about capture. And how would we determine whether positions put forward by leaders of any of our groups actually, how would we determine whether they actually reflect the views of the broader community that that group claims to represent? Those are critical questions in my mind with regard to these issues.
Thank you, Chuck. I'll reply later, or Evan will reply later, but let's see who else is raising a hand. As far as I can see, Chuck has put down his arm, so I see no other request right now. So, whilst we wait for others to come up with a remark or a question, I'll try to answer briefly Chuck's remark. Informed consent, it's of course a very good point. We had thought about this. It was discussed within the drafting group of the R3 paper. How measured? What about large numbers? What about the value of silence? And how representative are all of these categories? So we are not a negotiation group, so our point is not to make rules which would then be taken up in ICANN as a tool. Our purpose was more to restate some basic principles. For instance, there is obviously a quite natural tendency for business to be better organized than the individual users. And in that way, the organized voice is often better heard and has more impact than the user community voice. So this is one thing we wanted to bring up, and that was one of the purposes of the R3 exercise in the first place. This is a very quick answer. It is not complete. The important thing, though, Chuck, is that we are taking notes, both Evan and I think some of our friends on staff, so that we will look at all your comments and suggestions after this webinar and see which we wish to integrate into the R3 text and in what form. And if we have any doubts about the meaning of your intervention, then we will get back to you to make sure that we understood correctly. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
I see that Evan has raised his hand. Please, Evan.
Thanks, Jean-Jacques. I'm going to deal for a moment, Chuck, with your concept of informed consent. This is actually a very important one, and I'll take it from a slightly different perspective than Jean-Jacques. In my time within At Large, I've used the term frequently that I find At Large to be going on a never-ending hamster wheel of running after public comments. That is, there's such a massive volume of things going on that sometimes finding out what are the big things and what are the little things in itself and wading through all that is a massive task. We have 15 people on the At Large Advisory Committee. We have 10 more people who are the regional leadership. We have ALS representatives behind them, and we have the membership of those groups, at least within At Large, is our method of trying to get that out. Likewise, in the GAC, you have a room full of individuals that are expected to come to a meeting and make communiques, and some have good communications with their home governments, some do not. The concept of informed consent at least to me, means having a way of ICANN's decision-making that, number one, does a much better job of separating implementation from policy, has a way of implementing, of doing implementation in a way that includes stakeholders, but doesn't have to go through, the public comment process may work for some parties. It does not work for the advisory councils, at least in any capacity that I've seen. The way that that engagement takes place has to give time for proper engagement. It has to give clarity. It has to give the ability to communicate in multiple languages. And when there are large, big-picture issues that ICANN has to deal with, there has to be a significant amount of engagement and the time to do that engagement. And that doesn't mean, that the CEO of ICANN does a roadshow to four cities, introduces the GTLD program, and, okay, we've done global engagement. No, there's a whole lot more to that that needs to be done. And so when I think of informed consent, I think of putting the tools in place and putting the communications channels in place to allow people to clearly understand what's going on, to be able to separate policy from implementation, and to help separate the wheat from the chaff, so that when there are big picture things that require a significant global consultation, that we have the ability to do so and the ability to tell the difference of when that needs to be done. I don't know if that answers your question, but the issue of informed consent was definitely something front and center to us. Thanks.
There's a hand raised by Garth Bruin. Garth, please come in.
Oh, thank you very much. This is Garth Bruin for the record. And before I, trample over any discussion that's still going on, I do have a couple of points which are relevant, I guess, to the Part 3 and Part 4. Part 3 in terms of the global governments, and then Part 4 in terms of institutional and practical cooperation. As chair of NARALO, I have started three separate sub-reports that focus specifically on ICANN's technical functions. The three different reports are on language and translation, and then also on travel, and then the third one is on compliance. And these are all issues which people within at large and outside of the community, in the general internet community, have brought up to me as being extremely concerning. And these are also areas where I've done a certain amount of research in and have come up with some concerns of my own. The travel issue is one that we're constantly kind of banging on, and I think, piece by piece we're getting, fixes for specific issues. It may be something in the long run we may, have a more comprehensive plan for addressing travel concerns. In terms of language and in interpretation and translation, I'm kind of relying on some members of our community to bring their concerns to me, especially in the Spanish-speaking community and within the Francophone community in North America. I'm certainly open to ideas from anywhere else in any region, anywhere around the world when it comes to these issues. Because the business is typically in English, I really need people to bring their concerns to me, because I'm not going to be aware of them immediately. So I'm just kind of putting that out there as an advertisement here on this call. The third issue about compliance is something that I've spent a considerable amount of time on. And there's definitely an ongoing concern on my end that when it comes to the basic functions within ICANN in terms of managing their contracted parties, it's not going anywhere. And we've kind of had this more than a year-long back and forth with compliance, where sometimes there appears to be progress, but in the long run, there is actually more retreat than progress. And I know Heidi's on the call, and And I feel like Heidi may be, and she can speak for herself, I feel like she's being thrown under the bus because I've been promised a bunch of answers to various questions we've put directly to compliance, and we haven't gotten them. And, you know, Heidi is saying that this is just an administrative issue about answering the questions, but I feel like it's much more serious. And I know that we've kind of started out with this particular working group in addressing these issues. And I just want to remind everybody that this issue in terms of compliance functionality is far from resolved. It's far from fixed. And I'm going to put my most recent chair report on compliance into the chat so everybody can look at it if they want to. And then I'll put my hand down and let other people talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Garth. That's very useful. So to sum up your intervention, you have addressed various problems, all of which can come into Chapter 3, Global Governance, or Chapter 4, Practical Cooperation Arrangements of the R3 paper. As I mentioned to Chuck before, we'll have a very close look at your remarks, and we'll see to what extent we can integrate that into a next version of the R3, and better still, into the next phase of the R3 paper, which will be a discussion in Beijing in the course of the ICANN 46 meeting. Thank you, Garth. I'm looking at the Adobe attendees list. I see no other hands raised just now. So whilst I wait for people to come in if they wish, let me say that Evan and I have had various remarks through the chair of ADAC or through other channels, and I would like to voice some of these concerns which came to us. I will not give names because these people don't happen to be on the call just now, but I will express the concerns. One of them was that you noticed in our recommendations about the multi-stakeholder system, our third recommendation, I will read, said this: address the country code top-level domain, CCTLD, diversity of practices vis-a-vis ICANN's general standards and best practices. And there was a fear expressed by this person that we would create a situation which might become unmanageable if we were to try or to attempt to harmonize or even to bring closer together the standards or the practices regarding CCTLDs with those of the GTLDs. That was one point. Another point which was made also by a person who unfortunately did not make it to this webinar was to say that this R3 paper is all wrong because it comes at the wrong time, and if the ALAC wants to destroy ICANN, we should just go ahead and continue with this R3 paper. So I have a very clear answer based on my own fairly long experience of life. It's that if I were a U.S. citizen, I've heard so many commentators from the industrial sector who say that, no, it's not time yet for a real reform on gun legislation, you see. And it's never time for a complete review of the gun legislation. So in the same way, I think that people who are opposed to having any sort of global overview and maybe even some recommendations about the way forward, well, it's never the right time. And what they do is generally to ask an external consultant to make a study and then a study of the study. So I'm a bit brutal in my reply to this, but I feel quite strongly about this, and having been on the board and now on the ALAC, I've seen how these things work. Finally, a last remark which was made to us was to say that there is a new CEO who's doing very good work, and the situation is already changing. And I completely agree with this. I was impressed by the first meetings with the new CEO. But precisely, I think that the interesting point of this webinar, but also of the discussions we will have between now and Beijing, and also at the ICANN 46 meeting in Beijing, is that we must take into account and modify the R3 paper accordingly. We must take into account the changes already being made, thanks in great part to the new CEO. And this we will do, of course, in all fairness. So those were three points which were brought up by people who, unfortunately, are not on this call today. So I see that Chuck would like to speak. Chuck, the floor is yours.
Thanks again, Jean-Jacques and Ed, for the responses so far. Just somewhat of a follow-up to the informed consent question I asked, because your paper says that as a goal to fully engender the informed consent of sovereign states represented through the GAC. What's your thinking? I mean, do you think, and I guess I'm addressing this to the authors of the paper, that the GAC needs more than an advisory role?
At this stage, we are not pushing or advocating radically, sorry, I should answer by saying this is Jean-Jacques speaking, responding to Chuck's remark. No, I don't think that we are aiming at asking ICANN to provide governments with a radically different status from what it is today. Because, as you know, the GAC can operate only on the principle of consensus. There is no voting. There is no counting of voices or of votes. So that's the first remark. The second thing, Chuck, is that through my experience, I've seen that in the GAC, there is a great distance between a small group of states. When I say states, I don't mean Idaho and Delaware. I mean in sovereign states, in the sense of the United States of America, China, France, etc. So states are represented in various ways. For instance, some delegates have a direct access to a decision-making level within their own government or state, and others haven't a clue or are very far removed, maybe 6 or 10 steps from the decision maker. So it is this diversity which is difficult to manage. So one of the things we've been thinking about is that through increased exchanges within all the structures of ICANN, governments could be made more aware of what is really at stake for them as the designated representatives of the public interest of their countries, so that there should be a more harmonious and more representative, in a way, presence of their country within the GAC. Does that answer at least partly your question, Chuck?
Yes, Jean-Jacques, it does, that's helpful. If I was to take it a little further, though, I would go from the GAC to the at-large, because you actually refer to both of them in one of your, the first bullets under multi-stakeholder system, where you talk about transforming the roles of the Government Advisory Committee and the at-large from purely advisory to involvement in policy formation. Especially with regard to the at-large, I was somewhat surprised by that statement, because my view from a GNSO perspective is the at-large has been very involved in policy development. I'm curious as to how the at-large could be more involved in policy development in the GNSO side.
Right.
So anything you would say on that would be helpful.
Thank you, Chuck. Evan will be responding to your remark, if that's all right, Chuck. Evan, go ahead.
Chuck, I can give you two answers. One is theoretical and one is very, very real world. In the theoretical, at least on issues that I've seen, especially to do with, say, the new GTLD program, we've had a situation in which governments have not participated in the early part of the policy development, and then they come in with a very big stick and have summit meetings with the ICANN board and senior staff and make demands and issue scorecards and things like that, things that would probably not have happened in quite such a confrontational manner had their concerns been baked in from the very beginning. There seemed to be no way, for instance, to bring the GAC in at early stages of a PDP. So in other words, the only recourse that it has is to wait for the entire process to unfold and then come out with a communique at the end of it and sort of go to, you know, try and basically comment on the finished product without actually having a say in how that product gets done. And so I'm the intent of trying to start this conversation was to see how some kind of engagement can happen at the very earliest of stages. To a certain extent, the ALAC has been brought in, but I've also seen some friction on, for instance, the issues of cross-community working groups. You know, we've had a couple, and I've also heard some very, very negative comments from people in the GNSO about why do we need these CCWGs. I think they've been good engagements, but their acceptance is by no means a slam dunk. So there has to be, I think, a better engagement of this. I've had times personally where I've been involved in working groups where there's been a confrontation that essentially somebody from a GNSO party has said, well, the ALAC disagrees with our constituency group on this issue. Well, we got a vote of council and you don't, so screw the consensus. And so that's a very, very real-world thing that's happened recently. So, Chuck, I would take issue with the fact that we're fully integrated into the ecosystem. The GAC has even more problems, but the at-large is not, I would say, fully integrated. I think we need to deal with that.
Thank you, Evan. Chuck, you have an opportunity to respond to that, please.
Thank you to both of you. This is Chuck again. Evan, I think you know I'm probably on the exact same page as you with regard to the GAC early involvement, and if we can ever solve that problem, we will have made a great accomplishment. So with the at-large, though, and you know, I'm sorry for the comment that someone made in a working group, those kind of things are going to happen, but if there are specific areas where the at-large has not been fully integrated into the GNSO policy development process, that'll come as a surprise to me. There are going to be little glitches and little things that happen because of the diversity of our groups, but I think you've responded to my question. We may differ a little bit in terms of that the at-large needs to be more than have more than the role they have now, but that's another subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Evan, would you like to respond to this? And then we'll move on to something else. First, we'll see if there are any other speakers on the line. Evan?
No, my only reply, Chuck, is that, as you say, we are in far more agreement than we disagree on these issues. And believe me, I'm not trying to say that, okay, ALAC needs to be a stakeholder group. I am not. I'm just trying to... The paper is an attempt to, shall we say, think out loud and start a conversation on how to deal with this. And the existing solutions, that is, well, make something a stakeholder group, isn't necessarily the answer.
Thank you, Evan. So I'd like to see if there are any other interventions. Is anyone keen to make a comment or put a question? Or make a suggestion on the way forward for the R3 exercise we initiated. I don't see any. On the chat in Adobe Connect, I see Paul Diaz saying, to Evan, the issue of getting GAC more involved early in policy processes was the focus of our ATRP recommendation 12. ICANN claims it was addressed, but that's really open to debate. I strongly suspect this will be a hot topic for ATRT2. Right. So, Garth says, JGI, I'm deeply troubled. Someone thinks this paper could destroy ICANN. Is it really that fragile? Well, I was just quoting a remark which was forwarded to me, but that is not my opinion. Quite to the contrary. So with that, it is now 15:51 UTC, and we would now like to try to wrap up this session with a few remarks about the way forward. So I'll ask Evan to give his summation of this discussion, and then I will conclude. Evan, if you're ready, please go ahead.
Thanks. Essentially, well, first of all, I want to mention as a matter of technical detail that there is a public comment process that is open for this. It's not very often that ALAC is the initiator of a PCP. There is one open on the R3 paper, and so we are welcoming interventions. Jean-Jacques, Heidi has mentioned, and I unfortunately I missed it myself, that Thomas Lohenhaupt has asked a question about internet arrangements, that there's a bullet point that says that the board should be the executive committee of the ICANN community. Can we comment on the need and Can we comment on the need and implications of this recommendations? Jean-Jacques, would you like to take that first, or would you like me to have a moment?
No, go ahead.
One of the things that always struck me as very strange about reading the ICANN bylaws is that the fiduciary duty of the ICANN directors are to ICANN, not to the public. I've been on the board of a number of different nonprofits, some of them global nonprofits, and this is a very, very different approach, that your loyalty is actually to the institution itself, not to the people that are benefited by this, by the institution. That has a very, very subtle way of changing the way that ICANN works and the way that its high-level decisions are made. And the idea of making making the board the executive committee of the ICANN community essentially cements the concept of the board as not a decision maker, but a channel for the bottom-up process. That this is not so the way things are happening right now, that isn't quite always the case. And so, whereas there's rather than talking about specifics about the role of how the board is picked or this or that or whatever, that statement is sort of done with the intention of trying to open up a debate about the role of the ICANN board. Is it there to guide? Is it there to respond to the community? Or is it some kind of hybrid of the two? I think, personally, that needs to be addressed. I'm not particularly comfortable with the status quo, and I think the subtle implications of the way that ICANN is operated right now has actually caused and allowed it to act in ways that aren't always responsive of to the community it's supposed to serve. That's my personal view, and I'm certainly welcome to engage with others either personally or through this.
Thank you, Evan. This is Jean-Jacques Subo now speaking. So I see no other hands raised, and the time allotment was 1 hour. We're about 5 minutes away from closing time, so I'll take the opportunity now to give my own summing up of this, and especially with regard to the way forward. Now, I think that there are three steps between now, this webinar, and Beijing and slightly after Beijing, or ICANN 46. Will it be 46 or 47? Someone should correct me on that. First of all, we are in the public comment period, as Evan just reminded us, so that you all who are attending this webinar, but others as well, are very welcome to put in their comments in the adequate space which is provided for that on the ICANN website. We will not do any summing up of today's discussion and put it in that space because it's another exercise, of course. You understand that. Now, the second thing is that we will be taking into account, as soon as the public comment period is over, staff will be providing to us a resume or a compendium of the remarks which have been made in the public comment period, and we will see which can be integrated or should be integrated into the R3 paper. We have an open mind about this. It can entail large changes or not. At this stage, we don't know. We're open to that. And finally, in Beijing, we are hoping to have a public session, not only with people from within ICANN, many of whom are on this call today, but also with some observers who are interested in much wider concept of governance, of good governance, not only pertaining to the Internet, but in wider terms. Perhaps a top journalist who happens to be in Beijing at that time, perhaps a top government official or a professor who has been studying the governance questions for a long time. And the object of that is to arrive at a consolidated R3 paper, which could then be published for a second time in an augmented and hopefully improved version, which would then be very widely distributed so that it could be commented upon by people outside of the usual ICANN circles, if necessary or if they wish. Why do we have this approach? Because we believe that it's always interesting and, in fact, essential to have the views of ICANN insiders. But occasionally, it is necessary on these very large issues to submit our views, our ICANN insider view, to the test of reality of the much wider world, people who have concerns about governance and who are not necessarily experts about the Internet. And the step after that would be then to perhaps publish online a sort of resume of the R3 paper and the suggestions or discussions to which it has led. So that, in a few words, is the timetable we are thinking about. And now about content or substance or background, I have two remarks. One is that you noticed probably there is a certain convergence between the content of the R3 paper we co-authored with some other people and the concerns of the ATRT. And there is a call for candidates for the ATRT2. And it'll be interesting to see to what extent some of our concerns in the R3 paper are also the same concerns that will be taken up in the next exercise of the ATRT. And my last remark is about the consequences of the Dubai ITU General Assembly. I think that what has been made very clear these past 2 weeks or so is that you don't have sovereign states on one side and all the other actors, the main name providers, the business circles, users, etc., etc., on the other side. There is a clear divide between various sets of sovereign states on the one hand, and on the other hand, there is not an opposition, but at least there is a difference in approach very often between states and other stakeholders within ICANN, and certainly that is true for the user community which ANAC purports to represent, especially in countries where freedom of expression is a rare luxury and where censorship is rife. So that is really, I think, what is at stake in the larger picture. So I hope we have not bored you with the presentation of the R3 paper. We would have liked, I think, perhaps a bit more input from the community, from those of you attending, but all the same, we hope that it was of some little use to you, and we thank you very sincerely for taking the time to be on this webinar. Evan, would you like to end with a few words?
Just to thank you. It's very gratifying to see the large number of people that are on this chat. I hope you've all taken away something from it. I hope to be engaging with all of you and with more. I'm very happy to see the interest. And like Jean-Jacques has said, this is an ongoing thing. This is a conversation. This is not a hard and fast thing, but it's something that we thought needed to be done. This is a new initiative of at large, the idea of trying to help drive the conversation as opposed to constantly reacting to it is something we felt to be important. And thank you to all of you for being involved, for listening in, and I hope we can hear from you either collectively or individually. Thanks.
Thank you, Evan. I turn briefly to Heidi to find out if, from the staff perspective, if there is anything which should be added before we close shop.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. This is Heidi. Just to comment that the recording will be sent out to all of the lists very shortly. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you all. Thank you for your comments, and as Evan mentioned earlier, the comment period is still open. Please make use of it. We would be delighted to know your views and possibly take some of them into account into the next version of the R3 paper. Thank you all. Thank you, staff. Thank you, interpreters, and see you soon. Bye-bye.
And have a good holiday to everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.